Hey, you guys, time for another Flickers of Fear, my personal movie review show. It occurred to me the other day that in all the time that we've had this channel, one guy that I don't think we've ever covered, you know, it's long overdue that we did, or at least I did, was one Herschel Gordon Lewis, otherwise known as H.G. Lewis. Now, if you guys don't know, H.G. Lewis was an exploitation filmmaker. He's from Florida, and a lot of his movies were shot down here, usually around the Sarasota area. He started out, I think, doing kind of more sexploitation, softcore porn type of films. But in the early 1960s, he parlayed into gore, and he's pretty widely acknowledged as the first person to do what would now be called splatter flicks. Now, the first one of these and the one that he's probably most famous for came out in 1963, and it was called Blood Feast. And it's basically about a guy who's like a worshiper of some like Egyptian goddess or something. And it's, you know, it's him killing people to make this big cannibalistic feast or whatever, the titular Blood Feast, which makes sense. So if you see this in, I can't imagine what people in 1963 like thought of this movie, because I really don't think, yes, there had been, you know, proto slasher films, you know, like Psycho and things like that. But it's like, considering that Psycho was so shocking in 1960, and then just 3 years later, you have Blood Feast, which, you know, obviously not a mainstream film. It mostly played, you know, in the South, like on the drive-in circuit and things like that. But it was a huge leap forward. I mean, despite the movies being essentially exploitation pictures, they were very, very cheaply produced. You know, the acting's not great, the stories weren't great, but I mean, he really latched on to this over-the-top gore, just like, you know, buckets of blood and, you know, entrails and things like that. And he really sort of cemented his place in horror history, I suppose. So as I said, 1963 saw the release of Blood Feast, which was massively successful. And then the next year, he did another one called 2000 Maniacs, which is also pretty entertaining. I haven't seen it in a while, but I'll probably be doing that one somewhere down the line. And the third one in the so-called Blood Trilogy, they actually called it that later, like after all the movies were released, and they kind of packaged them all together for on VHS or whatever. The third one, the one that we're going to be talking about today, came out in 1965 and is called Color Me Blood Red. I will argue, as I said, it's been a while. I saw Blood Feast for the second or third time fairly recently, and I've seen 2000 Maniacs, but it's probably been like 15 years since I've seen it. But from what I can remember of those two, I think Color Me Blood Red is probably the least successful of the three. It's for sure the cheapest, I think. I think it only cost about 50 grand to make. And as I mentioned earlier, it was shot around the beaches of Sarasota, where they had rented a house. And pretty much the whole thing takes place in this one house and sort of the beach around it. That said, though, there's still like some kind of charm about this movie that I really kind of like. I can't really explain what it is. It's, as I said, it's not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination. Like, the acting is bad. Like, the score is overbearing and super loud. Like, the focus goes in and out. It's just, you know, it has these really, really long takes where nobody's talking and like nothing's happening and stuff like that. It's just like this really strange, and it's short. It's only like 79 minutes long, and some parts of it like feel like it's really long. But that said, I don't know. There's just something about this one I like. I guess it's maybe like the premise or whatever, even though the premise isn't super original either, because the premise for this movie, Color Me Blood Red, is pretty much exactly the same. Well, at least from what I remember, from the Roger Corman movie, A Bucket of Blood, which I think had Dick Miller in it. I mean, wasn't A Bucket of Blood, that was about a painter that used blood or something like that, right? I mean, I thought it was. If that was indeed Roger Corman's idea for that, this is pretty much the same thing. So what you have in Color Me Blood Red, you have this dude named Adam Sorg, and he's this painter, and he lives with his girlfriend Gigi in this beach house in Sarasota. Now, he seems like he's pretty successful as an artist. I mean, it's not like he's a starving artist. He has a nice beach house and everything, and he does have one-man gallery shows and whatnot, so that's pretty successful. So, at the very beginning of the movie, his girlfriend's kind of like getting on his case because he was supposed to go to this gallery opening and talk to his backers or whatever. So, he does have people that buy his stuff. but he still seems kind of cranky. And so he shows up there, and I guess like it's established that even though he seems fairly financially successful, he's not real successful with the critics. And like, they kind of give him this snotty attitude about, well, you know, you're kind of commercially successful, but your use of color could use some work. Evidently, he's not just happy painting stuff and having people buy them and like, you know, living on that. He has to be critically lauded as well. So he gets kind of upset about it, and he's just kind of like fighting with his girlfriend and whatnot. So then it so happens in a very, very contrived situation that he sort of like, he gets mad and he kind of tears up this one canvas of this shit that he was working on and leaves it on the floor. And there's like a nail sticking out of it. So his girlfriend comes out of the bedroom or whatever, and instead of just like stepping on the nail, which would have been the thing that would normally happen, she kind of leans down and is like, oh, a nail. And then she's like, oh no, I cut myself. So you know what I mean? So then she gets blood all over the canvas. And when he comes out, he's like, oh my God, this is the color that I always wanted, because apparently he'd never seen blood before and didn't realize what color it was. And the funny thing about it too is that, I mean, clearly, just like in a lot of movies from this era, you know, the blood is obviously tempera paint. So it's just very funny to me, like in a weirdly ironic way, that the whole premise is him using blood for paint, and then they're actually just using paint for blood. I don't know. That's just really funny to me. And also when blood dries, it turns like kind of brown and crunchy. So this bright, vibrant red that he has going on the paintings, it's just kind of like, I don't know. I'm putting way too much thought into this, clearly. So he gets very excited. This painting that he's been working on, he's like, this is it. This is it. So he kind of makes her, he's like, hey, let me see that finger that you cut. And then he starts like smearing it all over, which she kind of lets him do. She's like, all right, fine. But then after a while, she's like, dude, are you going to like fill up this whole canvas with blood? Because, you know, I kind of need the blood inside my body. So why don't you just use your own damn blood? If you're going to use that much of it, because I got other shit to do. So he's like, well, that's a capital idea. And he starts using his own blood. Obviously, he doesn't get too far with it. He covers up most of the canvas, but then he's just kind of like getting woozy and he falls asleep and everything. So pretty much from the jump, he has a fight with his girlfriend, and she says something like, well, you know, if you're going to paint with blood, then obviously, you know, you can't use yours all the time because you're going to run out. And so you can pretty much see where this is going. He obviously starts killing people to get their blood and using that for paint. And again, pretty predictably, when he starts taking these new paintings to the gallery, they're all like, this is the most brilliant painting that's ever been painted in the history of the world. And not a single person figures out that it's blood, which I guess, I don't know if the movie is that smart. Maybe it's some kind of supposed to be some kind of indictment of the art world or whatever. I'm not really sure. I don't think he was thinking about it that much. I'm thinking about it way more than he did. He was just trying to make a bloody movie about an artist who kills people and splatters their blood all over the canvas. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, so he does end up killing his girlfriend and kind of like uses her face, like he like stabs her in the face or in the head or something. And then he's like using her head to like smear blood on the canvas and everything. It's like pretty funny. And then as the time goes on, more teenagers sort of fall into his trap, where it's just kind of like, hey, let's go over to this secluded area of beach right in front of this house that we think is abandoned. Even though it's really weird, because one of the girls that ends up at his house later on, like modeling for him, that girl's mom is the same one that keeps going to the gallery and trying to buy his stuff. But the ironic thing is that when Adam starts painting these paintings, which are actually kind of cool, except for the second one he did was, but the first one was kind of cool looking. Although I thought it was a little much. I think he went a little over the top with it. Should have like reined it in a little. But she's the same woman that has been trying to buy his paintings. But then like when he starts painting with blood, for whatever reason, he doesn't want to sell them. Even though at one point he gets offered like $15,000. Which, shit, man, this was like 1965. That was probably like $1 million back then. That's probably not $1 million, but it was probably a lot. And he wouldn't take it. So I don't know if it was just because he was getting to be like a serial killer and it was just kind of like, oh, they're my trophies. Or maybe he just, I don't know what his deal was. Like, obviously, he wasn't like thinking like a rational human being, obviously. So yeah, so basically, all of these kind of teenagers wander into his orbit, and he kills a bunch of them. One of them he kills and just kind of buries in the shallow sand, like outside of his beach house or whatever. And then these other kids like stumble across it, and it's just kind of like it just kind of goes on from there. So it's not, you know, it's not a super complicated story. You don't even really have to pay attention to it most of the time because, to be honest, other than the few gore scenes, which are actually pretty good, it's mostly just blood. But there's a couple scenes where, like, there's a couple out on these like pedal bike things that you go through the, I'm not really sure what they're called, but they're like bikes, but then they have like floaty things on the side, so you can like bike on the top of the water. You guys know what I'm talking about. So there's a couple of those, and then he has like a motorboat, and he sort of like comes at him with that and like spears one of the dudes through the chest or whatever, and it's like there's bloody, and then there's kind of like chunks sticking out, and like at one point, like one of the girls he kills, and she's just hanging up on the wall, and she's got blood all over her midriff. But then there's like kind of like intestines, and he like squeezes the intestines into the bowl, like to paint with and shit like that. So, this isn't like as gory as Blood Feast. I don't think it's quite as gory as 2000 Maniacs. I remember that being fairly gory, but it's been a long time since I've seen it. This one just basically has maybe like three or four scenes where it's, you know, bloody and gory. And then the rest of it is just kind of like people wandering around, like teenagers, these teenagers who are obviously not teenagers. They're probably like in their 20s or 30s, I imagine, or maybe even older, going around making, like, talking inscrutably to one another in slang. And it's just so weird. The dialogue in this, which H.G. Lewis also wrote this movie, by the way, the dialogue in this is so hilarious and just so strange. I mean, so at one point, like when this one couple finds this dead body, like buried on the beach, like by this dude's house, literally the first thing the guy says when they pull, like they find a leg or whatever, and they pull like the leg out of the thing, first thing the guy says is, "Holy bananas." He's like, "That's a girl's leg, all right." And I was like, "Wow, that dude's a fucking observational genius." And they don't get like, they're upset about it, but they're not like, they're not like the kind of upset you would be if you found a fucking rotting dead body like a couple inches down in the sand. It's just they're very kind of like, oh, jinkies, you know what I mean? They don't say that, but it's just, it reminds me of that type of like Scooby-Doo sort of stuff. So at the end, like one of the teenagers gets taken, she's gonna model for him, and he has her like tied up because he's like, well, you can't even hold your hands up like to pose for the thing, so I'm gonna tie your thing, and then he's gonna axe her to death. But then her friends come looking for her and end up shooting the artist in the face. At which point, another irony, he falls onto a canvas and his head's all bloody and it kind of splatters on there. And then his kind of buyer or his agent or whoever comes over and like burns the canvas at the end and is like, you know, that's his funeral pyre, taking it very seriously. So, you know, it's not a technically competent movie, obviously. It's better than like Ed Wood. It's better than Manos. It's better than that kind of stuff. But it's still got a lot of problems with, you know, the edit. Like I said, some of the scenes just go on or for a really long time and, you know, nothing happens. The picture keeps going out of focus like every now and then. And the dialogue is just, it's bad, but it's also like really strange. So it's like really entertaining. Like the way that they talk is just like really funny. The gore is like pretty well done. It's obviously fake because, you know, 1960s, but as I said, he was like really ahead of his time. So it's crazy to think that this came out in 1965, like with all these intestines and gore and everything like that. And the background score, holy crap, man. It's like, because a lot of times there's not a lot of dialogue going on. So it's just kind of like, you know, teenagers walking around a beach and just like, where are we going to change into our bikinis? I don't know. I'm going to go over here and I'm going to do this. And it's just like endless. But the background score is just like this crazy, like instrumental jazz kind of stuff. And it's just so loud, and it's just like really obnoxious because it's just kind of like the songs just kind of like repeat over and over and over. Because I'm not a big fan of jazz. I like that it evokes that era, but there's so much of it in there, and it's just like assaulting you with music. It's just like so loud, and it's like really repetitive. And I just thought that was like really funny. It just kept cracking me up like every time. I was like, oh, here goes that part of that song again. So if you're into like trash cinema and you've never seen any of H.G. Lewis's movies, as I said, you know, this is one of those ones where you just kind of like sit around, you get drunk, you just watch them for the sheer, like, ridiculousness of them. This one is probably the least ridiculous of the three that he's known for. You know, Blood Feast probably being the most ridiculous and also probably the goriest. That was also the first one. 2000 Maniacs is also very funny. I think it was like Killer Rednecks or something. All I remember from that one is this, like, a dude, them putting a dude in, like, a spiked barrel and, like, rolling him down the hill. Unless I think they did a remake of that, I think, called 2001 Maniacs, I want to say, with Robert Englund in it. And I've seen that, but it's been a long time since I've seen that as well. So this one is probably, like, the most restrained of the three. And like I said, it's also the cheapest one. But if you're really into bad cinema and you really want to see sort of the roots of the splatter exploitation subgenre, then you probably do need to do yourself a favor and watch these. As far as I know, I don't know if 2000 Maniacs is on Tubi, but Color Me Blood Red and Blood Feast are both on there as of this recording. So, you know, go check them out. Get some brews, get some friends, have them all come over to your house and get super fucked up and watch some ridiculous H.G. Lewis gore movies. Because you need to. I mean, you know, if you're a horror fan, you probably should. So that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. And I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.